Lexington Rescue Mission has been serving the Lexington community now for 17 years and doing some amazing work in the world of those who are most chronically challenged when it comes to things like homelessness, joblessness, substance abuse, repeat offending to the point of reincarceration. And these guys are actually doing something about all of that. Today, we're going to take a look at the Lexington Rescue Mission on the Good Stuff Weekly. I'm Leo Brown. With the number of panhandlers we see on the streets in Lexington, it would be easy to think that homelessness is just an increasing challenge. But according to reports as of this past year, we're actually seeing a decline in homelessness. And one of those reasons is because of the work of the organization, the Lexington Rescue Mission. They are here not only to take people in off the streets, but to really provide amazing services to find ways to get them off the streets, to get them housed, and then more importantly, to find real cures for those situations that created their unfortunate situation to begin with, whatever that is, whether that's substance abuse, whether that is just a general lack of network, mentorship, just an amazingly important element when it comes to making sure that people are taken care of. This tiny operation. I'm pretty surprised when I walked in here because I've literally worked with this organization peripherally for years and hosted events for them and been there for their fundraisers. And you would think that it was just, I just assumed like a city block or a community even. But this right now, as of now, they have plans to grow. But right now, this really tiny, tucked away, almost hidden facility in North Lexington that is really doing an amazing job. And we're going to hear stories today that surprised me when I heard them. I think they'll surprise you. I think that you'll be astounded by the work that these individuals are doing, just exactly what kind of impact they're making in the Lexington community, and possibly somewhat responsible, I would have to believe, considerably responsible for that decline in numbers of homeless in Lexington because of what they're doing. 17 years, and they're still finding ways to change directions, to be more effective, and we're going to find out about all of that. Jim Connell and his wife, Becky, started this in the year 2000, and that was when their daughter was about college age. Laura Carr is now running this operation, and we're going to talk to her in just a moment to find out firsthand exactly what this organization is doing and just what kind of impact they're making on the Lexington community. More in a moment. Laura Carr was Laura Connell, the daughter of Jim and Becky, who started the Lexington Rescue Mission. She is now the Director of Development for the Lexington Rescue Mission. I had the chance to sit down with her and really hear what the goals, what the mission actually is in a nutshell, and where all of this is going. This is my conversation with Laura.
So the mission of the mission is that we exist to glorify God through a Christ-centered ministry that meets the physical, emotional, and spiritual needs of hurting people in the greater Lexington area. So that's pretty broad.
And say, that's a big mission.
That is right? A big mission. Yeah. So the way that we kind of break that down is in three ways. One is we really try to help meet critical needs, food, clothing, housing, employment, the things that when people are in crisis that they really need help with. And then our goal is to build relationships with people as we get to know them and help them and be able to minister to their deeper needs and really be able to offer healing from the inside out. Mm. and ultimately to be able to offer hope for the future.
Yeah.
And so if you break it down into help, healing, hope, it's a little bit easier to remember and a great way to kind of summarize what we're all about here at the Rescue Mission.
And when you, when somebody comes here, have they often been refused by other services? Have they found themselves kind of on a hard to serve sort of platform?
So often when people come here, they've burned bridges with family. They may have used up chances with other organizations.
Right.
And so they often feel like they have nowhere else to turn. But our goal is to be a welcoming place where anyone is welcome to come and to really be able to meet people where they're at and minister to them there. And that means that sometimes that process of healing that I talked about, it's not an overnight thing for most people. It's something where they come in, and as we build that relationship with them, the walls start to break down and God starts to really move in their heart and in their life. And sometimes it's over a course of months and sometimes it's years, but we see lives really transformed by God here.
Yeah. I've been privileged to be at one of your fundraising dinners, and the thing that I was so impressed with was the testimonials that, that just kind of seemed to keep on keeping on, right? And it was just one story after another of individuals who've been helped by this. And so obviously a lot of success that you guys can attribute to what you're doing through the grace of what you're doing, but at the same time, an amazing, I mean, that's got to feel good when you see that transformation take place.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. I mean, this is an amazing ministry to be a part of because you really do see God at work in people's lives in really amazing ways, providing, opening doors for housing where there were no options for people, helping people who have struggled with sobriety for years be able to finally get clean and sober. Reuniting families where parents have lost their kids and somehow miraculously, you know, he brings them back together. And so we work with people who are in really dark places, people who are living in homelessness, in poverty, people who are leaving incarceration or who are currently incarcerated. And sometimes it can be, it can seem bleak, the circumstances, but we know because we've seen it happen over and over and over that there's hope.
Yeah.
And so it, really a lot of what we're doing is just trying to help people see that there is hope and to start to live into the promises that God has for them.
Wow. Now you kind of grew up in this environment, right?
Well, a little bit. My parents started the Rescue Mission when I was in college. And so, when I graduated, I took a job as a journalist. That was my focus of study. And, I would come and visit and volunteer when I worked at the newspaper, helping to kind of get the buildings ready and, do what I can, to help with their newsletter and things like that, things I could help with. But it wasn't too long into, them having the mission open that I decided I wanted to try to help serve full time. So I came down to do a year of AmeriCorps and I thought that would be it. I would give them a year and, help them out, get them off, you know, kind of get them off and running.
No.
And I fell in love with the ministry and just couldn't stay away. So I ended up going off and working for some other nonprofits, but eventually I came back here to be the development director.
Wow. So when was it, how long ago was it that you had your first taste of this?
Well, I was an AmeriCorps member back in 2004, 2005.
Right.
And then I came back here to work full time in 2007.
Wow.
So I've been here just a little over 10 years now.
Now, are your parents still involved? Pretty hands on still?
Oh yeah. My dad is still the executive director. He's obviously the founder as well. So he leads us and he's in charge. My mom has stepped down to part-time. She is a registered dietitian by her background. So she oversees our meal planning and does all the purchasing for the mission and things like that. But she's also a caregiver for her mom, who's 99 and lives in Indiana on her own. So my mom spends about half the time here and half the time in Indiana.
I think that's interesting that there would be a dietitian on staff. I mean, that's obviously just the way it worked out. It wasn't necessarily intentional, I guess. But you think about nutrition as being so vital, especially to someone who doesn't get regular nutrition. Is that something that you guys focus on, trying to get the kind of biggest bang for the buck, so to speak, when it comes to feeding?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we serve more than 40,000 meals out of the Rescue Mission every year.
Wow.
And so meals are a big part of what we do. They're often the entry point for people who are coming into the mission.
Mm-hmm.
They'll come for a meal and then they'll find out that we can help them with housing or employment or other things.
Right.
But our goal, you know, one of our key goals with obviously with the meals is to meet those nutritional needs. We had a couple in here about a week ago. They hadn't eaten in 3 days.
Oh, wow.
And you think about that's not unusual, you know, folks that are going without for days on end. And so we're looking at providing well-balanced meals, but also really helping people access nutrition so that they don't just have to rely on us for a meal, but, you know, really making sure they know where they can go in the community. The great thing about Lexington is there's no shortage of meals. There really are. There's meals all over the place. Wow. God's Pantry provides food for people that have housing. They can bring home groceries. So there's lots of opportunities, but a lot of times people just don't know where to go. And so a big part of what we do is connecting people with other resources.
So how do people find out about you? How do they know that you're here?
A lot of people, we actually survey our guests to figure out how they found out about us. So a lot of people find out about us through word of mouth. They have met somebody on the street or a friend or a family member who's been helped by the rescue mission, and they encourage them to come over here. And that's the majority of the people that that find their way here. But 211, which is the United Way helpline, directs a lot of people here as well. So people call 211 or other agencies in town. We partner with a lot of other nonprofits and organizations, and they refer people here a lot. So the other agencies, as well as United Way 211, are another big source of people. And then we do some outreach as well. We have a jail ministry that we do in the local jails and prisons. And so a number of people will first encounter us there while we're teaching classes and doing mentoring. And then they'll, when they are released, they'll come out here to the rescue mission.
Wow. And you provide that kind of first stop sort of place for those reentering.
Yes, definitely. That's a really growing aspect of what we've been doing in the last couple of years. We're doing classes in Fayette County, Woodford County, Jessamine County, as detention centers, the jails, as well as the prisons at North Point, which is near Danville, and Blackburn here in Fayette County. And so one of the things that we really try to stress is that when people get out, that we have lots of resources for them here at the Outreach Center. We have money to provide them with help getting into an apartment so we can help pay their rent so they don't have to be homeless when they get out. We have employment training and job placement. We have all kinds of social worker case management, pastoral care, we have a full-time case manager just devoted to people who are reentering from prison. And so with all those resources, there's no reason why someone shouldn't have the kind of support that they need. So our goal is really just getting the word out. Once people know that we're here, they're often just really grateful to be able to come.
As you're talking, it reminds me of years ago in the early 90s, I had a neighbor in Lexington who found himself, I guess, in a surprise situation with a young child. He was not, he and his girlfriend, I guess, they lived in the apartment adjacent to mine, weren't really of the means to provide as well as they'd hoped. And he, I remember distinctly was I wrote a letter of character reference for him because he had been arrested for shoplifting because he was stealing baby formula.
Oh my goodness.
And you look at that, you're like, you know, there's so many places to go. I'm not saying that that's your forte, but there's so many places for people to go. And you talk about, you know, so often, unfortunately, as you know, what happens with incarceration, it becomes a cycle.
Exactly.
And these individuals find themselves just back thinking that that's the only way.
Exactly.
That's the system. That's
exactly
the way they know to function. So obviously, you're capable with this, with the resources you have, to break those cycles.
Yeah. Right? And that's our goal. You know, the recidivism rate here in Kentucky is 40%. So 40% of people that are released are going to go back into prison in a three-year time span. And so our goal is to cut that in half and to make it 20% the folks that we're serving. So we...
Do you see that? Do you
see
those numbers?
Yeah, we're seeing the numbers. Wow. So I was actually just looking at that last week for a grant. And I think out of the, we had 100 and something people that graduated from our classes last year. And another 100 that came to us once they were released, 117, I think, once they were released for help getting back into the community. And of those, I think there was only like 4 or 5 that recidivated. And
oh,
so,
my goodness.
So that was a,
I mean, that sounds like you're better than cutting it in half, right?
So far. Yeah. But, you know, time will tell over the long run. We've really just been tracking those numbers for the last year. And so we're excited to see, the impact that that's going to make. Kentucky has the 7th highest incarceration rate in the world. And so when you look at the number of people that are in our jail system, for one, it's unsustainable from just a practical standpoint, a taxpayer standpoint.
Yeah.
But from a compassionate standpoint, there's a lot of people whose lives are just broken and that need that extra hand up just to be able to help them to get back on their feet. And so our goal is to provide some of that practical help, but also really through our classes and through mentoring, connecting people with mentors, we really want to be able to help break some of the break down some of those root things that are leading to that criminal behavior.
Mm. mentoring obviously so important because so many individuals have not had positive role models, right? And I think that that's a pattern that you see a lot in incarceration, homelessness, substance abuse, whatever. So tell me a little bit about that mentoring and how that works for you guys.
Yeah, so we have mentoring opportunities with our reentry program as well as with the, our transitional living program. With the reentry program, we really do it in two ways. One is we have mentors that sit in on our classes and do what we call group mentoring. So they basically are just helping to mentor the class as a group, and we'll have usually two or three different mentors in a particular class that lend their experience, encourage the people that are taking the class, and really try to support them as they try to make steps forward. And then as people are released, we want to have teams of mentors, a small group of two, three, four mentors that will surround each person as they are released. So that way there's not the danger of one person becoming too reliant on one other person. You have a small team. And that's based on a model that was developed by a group called Mission Behind Bars and Beyond. And so we train all of our mentors in their model, and our mentors go through some pretty extensive training to be able to really effectively mentor people. And the goal isn't that you're going to solve, as a mentor, you're not having to solve their housing problem or their employment problem or any of those things. You're lending emotional and spiritual support for people who oftentimes are trying to start afresh. They've left behind old relationships that were toxic, and they're trying to have new and healthy friendships. And so the mentor provides that. We'll provide on the rescue mission side, our staff provides the professional support to be able to help connect people with the housing and employment and those kind of things. So for me, as I look at mentoring, what an opportunity to be able to invest relationally in the life of someone who really is at a critical juncture in their life. And the same goes for the mentors who pair one-on-one with our residents who are in transitional living. We, a lot of the guys who live in our transitional house, they'll stay with us for a few months. They may be there 9 months. Just depends on the person. Well, while they're with us, we really want them to have a mentor who can meet one-on-one with them on a weekly basis or biweekly basis and really be able to just be a support to them. We have, again, we have staff that can provide the practical help, but we need mentors who can be friends, basically, who can be encouragers and who can be cheerleaders for those who are really trying to get back on their feet.
Laura, do you find the strongest mentors come from those who've been in that position themselves and found themselves on the other side?
It definitely helps to have that background because you understand some of the challenges that they're facing. You understand, particularly for folks that are in recovery, it can be really helpful to have someone who's walked that before. And so we try to find through groups like Celebrate Recovery or other 12-step groups and things like that. A lot of times those are great opportunities for people to find mentors. But it doesn't have to be that. You know, we all have sin. We all have challenges in our life that we've overcome. And it doesn't have to look exactly identical to the person that you're mentoring to be able to lend that support and to be able to be a friend.
Yeah. Laura, one more question. Mm-hmm. So we're at the beginning of the year here always for organizations. Generally, it's, you know, what are the goals for this year? So what are you hoping to accomplish? What are you looking to do?
Well, we have some really big things on the horizon, the biggest of which is we are preparing within the next few weeks to open a new facility on North Broadway right in downtown Lexington.
Wow.
And it's going to add 20 more beds for men in transition.
That's great.
So men who are coming out of homelessness for one reason or another. Maybe they're leaving incarceration. They could be coming out of a shelter off the streets. But they need that place to live. So that'll add a little more than double our residential capacity. And then we're also on the ground level. It's a two-story building. And on the ground level, we're going to move our employment services and reentry services over there. So it's going to really expand our capacity to be able to offer more job training, more job placement, and to be able to meet those practical needs of people who are making that transition back into the community. So for us, it's a huge undertaking because we are going to be just growing exponentially this year. And so as we look to that, it's exciting. We have a stack of applicants that are on the waiting list to come into the Potter's House. So to be able to offer beds and to be able to move people in, particularly this winter, is going to be a real blessing, but it's also going to mean new challenges for us. We have to have, right now we're trying to find residential supervisor that can be on site, live in, like we have at our other house. So that's always a challenge to find the right person for that role. And then just to be able to raise the support that we need to be able to provide the services.
Wow. And when does that open?
Well, we are currently assembling all the furniture as of today. We're getting the phone system up and running today. So my guess is within the next couple weeks, we'll probably be up and running over there.
Wow. Exciting.
Yep.
Well, Laura, it's always impressive to see what you guys are doing. And it's great for me to be here because I've been a part, ancillarily, if you will, of this organization for some time with your events and other interviews. But to be here for the first time and see what you guys do, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you here. And if anybody listening is local and wants to come in, we do tours several times a month.
Oh,
and we always
okay.
post those on our website.
Wow.
So that's a great opportunity to get a good overview of what we're doing and opportunities to get involved.
That's great.
Ways to support. It's just a great time. Plus, you'll get to meet my dad, Jim, who's our executive director.
Yeah.
And he'll give you the full lowdown.
Yeah, that's awesome. Laura, thank you for sharing. Really
thank you so much,
it.
Leo. Take care.
You're welcome. Talking earlier about the declining numbers of homelessness in Lexington, which is a beautiful thing to see when we can really change the community and really find ways of making a positive impact. But all of that impact takes a tremendous amount of work. I was able to speak with Erica Dominguez. She's the director of outreach for the Lexington Rescue Mission. And one of those who is most crucial in this equation of really trying to find ways of getting people off the street and getting them housed. This is what Erica had to say about her experience at the Lexington Rescue Mission.
So we have several programs within the building. We provide meals to clients. We also have walk-in services where clients can come in with whatever need, and we try to meet that direct need or give them the resources to meet the needs that they have.
So you kind of do a little bit of an assessment of somebody coming in to see exactly what it is that they need. That's kind of the first step?
Yes, that's kind of the first step, to just kind of talk with them and see where they're at and what they need. And then we can kind of direct them in the best place to go.
Okay.
And so there's several different options there. The programs under me is a homeless intervention program.
Okay.
And, that's actually the program.
Okay. Right.
And then everything else is, we have a reentry division, transitional housing, employment. And so I can filter people through to other programs.
Okay. Now, are all of those programs part of your offering, or do you also network with other organizations to get individuals plugged in?
Well, we also network with other organizations, but we do offer all those programs in
okay.
the house.
Oh,
so
great.
First we want to refer to a program within our organization that can assist them, and then we'll refer to programs outside.
I got you.
Our organization.
But your position essentially is, let's keep these individuals from being homeless. Let's start there.
Yes, okay. that's our program that we do here at the Outreach Center, is the homeless intervention program, and it's, they're homeless. How can we help them to get housed as quickly as possible?
Okay.
And there is an assessment that the city uses that we use also.
Okay.
And so if it's best that they go on the coordinated entry list with the city, we'll direct them in that path. If we think they can self-resolve, we'll try to help brainstorm them and give them financial resources to be able to self-resolve. Mm. And if they look like they need a little bit more help, case management and financial assistance, that's when our program steps up and tries to help people with finding the housing, because navigating the housing system in Lexington can be overwhelming.
Yeah. Wow.
And then ongoing case management after the house for budgeting and just basic services, furniture, the things we take for granted.
Yeah, sure, right.
But if you're homeless, you have nothing to start with, and you want to make it to feel like home and that they're stable as long as possible. So that's what we try to do.
Wow. So what kind of success do you guys see with that intervention program? Are you able to pretty much serve anybody who comes to you? Are you able to help them in some way, shape, or form?
We're either able to help them or refer them to a program that fits them better.
Okay.
So either, sometimes the best thing is to diverge them to self-resolve.
Okay.
And just kind of encourage them and give them other resources.
Right.
And then there's some people who need more permanent supportive housing than we can provide, who need the long-term year after year after year of assistance. So we help with the first month's rent. That's the only financial assistance we give, because having that $1,000 to start up to move in can be overwhelming.
Because you're also talking about a deposit. You're talking about the first month, all of this stuff together. Yeah.
So if they pay the deposit, we'll pay the first month's rent. And then we're with them to help them get the furniture, the basic needs that they need to kind of set up the apartment and ongoing support. And the ongoing support is usually 3 to 6 months.
Right.
We did just start this program in August, so I don't have very long-term results. But so far it's looking really good as far as people are staying house 3 months, and we have two clients that we did kind of move in before the program officially started in June, and they've been housed for 6 months. So we're really excited to see the long-term effect of this program.
So talking to Laura a moment ago, it kind of seems like there's an interesting dynamic here at Lexington Rescue, because you guys have been an organization for, 20 some odd years? But you're still developing new programs. That's got to be exciting, right?
It is exciting, and we always want to be aware of the needs in the community and how to best meet those needs. So we are always evaluating where we're at and how we can better serve our client population.
Because I think you know as well as I do that a lot of times we think, well, it's always worked this way, and that's just the way we're going to do it. But there's always a changing dynamic in any environment, right? I mean, you guys got to, I mean, obviously you're aware of that and you're trying to meet that need.
And the part that we feel is one of the most valuable is the housing navigation, because a lot of people, if they're working and that's new for them, trying to get on their up on their own, trying to find an apartment. And then if there's felonies, if there's other issues that are holding them back, it can be even a harder, overwhelming process. We've had clients they get so frustrated because they put in application fee and application fee, and then they just get turned down everywhere they go. So helping to do that little step of calling around and checking and building partnerships with landlords, it's so important to just make people aware that just because people have fallen down once doesn't mean they're not going to have success next time, and really believing every person has a right for housing. That's really the starting point, is that every person has a right to housing. So how can we help them get there?
Well, you know, it kind of reminds me of there's an old document. It was the turn of the century, essentially, of the 20th century into the 20th century in the Catholic Church, called Rerum Novarum, which is really cool. Some of you should read at some point. Basically talking about that type of dignity that comes from, and actually, you know, the Pope at the time goes as far as to even talk about land ownership, right? About, you know, getting to that point and having that right of finding that type of autonomy that comes with that. But even if you're not at that point, just simply having a place to call your own, right? I mean, that's valuable. It's invaluable, really, right?
Yes, it's so huge to our clients, and we try to do our best to help them have that independence and work with them to connect them to the resources that if we can't meet their needs, who can help them have that? We don't do a lot of mental health services, but we have community connections where we refer people to. We always want that anyone who comes in, it's how can we help you? And for my division, it's how can we get you housed? And so if we can't do it, who can do it? And making those referrals and being cheerleaders for our clients and encouraging them through the process. That can be really overwhelming because they're really successful at being homeless. But it can be a lifestyle change and a cultural change, and it can be very hard for them.
So you mentioned a moment ago the relationships with landlords. Does it help when somebody comes through this particular service because you have those that, like, well, we know the rescue mission is going to bring us people who are really on the up and up or trying to better themselves? Does that help?
It does help. Sometimes we just started the program in August, so it is
still new.
Yeah, it's still in its baby stages.
But it's working so far,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. It's working so far. So we're still looking to build those relationships and those trusting the landlord, trusting us, but also knowing that ultimately it's the client who signs the lease. So trying to have that balance of kind of selling our clients and mediating when needed be. But so far, actually, we haven't needed much mediation. Our clients have been able to pay their rent and talk with their landlords. We do, I feel, have some great landlords who's working with us, who take care of issues as they come up. So we haven't had to do that much mediation. Which is exciting. I know that'll come one day.
Right, sure.
But so far, so good.
That's
great. We're excited.
Now, are you helping them also find employment through this? So, I mean, they're able to have that stability, or what are you doing with that?
Well, for employment, we actually have a program with in-house. It's not directly under me,
okay.
but that does help them find employment.
Okay.
And so for some of our clients, we started in August, and for this whole time, we've been walking with them.
Okay.
Because some will have temporary employment looking to try to find full time, mm-hmm. and it falls through, and then the construction season mm-hmm. ends yeah. in the wintertime. And yeah. so there's all these issues. Add in, you know, there is mental health issues mm-hmm. and addiction problems. And so it can be a slow process mm-hmm. sometimes.
Yeah.
But we do try to connect people to employment through our in-house program or refer them to other programs
right.
for the employment. And we kind of wait with them through that process.
Mm.
Because our program, they do have to pay 50-50.
Mm.
So they have to pay the deposit if we pay first month's
right,
rent.
Sure.
We can't house them without employment.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is kind of a barrier for them being housed
mm-hmm.
for our program. Now, there are city programs that don't require that employment.
Wow.
And those are people who are usually higher risk and
right.
have more problems than we can help.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but you're looking
process.
For a partnership. When somebody comes here, you're saying mm-hmm. we're not just going to give a handout. We're going to
yes.
really partner with you, and we're going to expect there's some degree of expectation. You want to see something happen there, right?
Absolutely. We want to work with the people who come in. We can't do it all. They have to put forth the effort, but most of them are more than willing to.
Hmm.
A lot of times, they just don't know where to start.
Right.
And for some people, it's that they're already receiving Social Security income or disability, but they can't find anyone who will accept them that's not wanting two times or three times the rent.
Oh, geez.
And so it's just...
Because they're high risk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're high risk. They have low income.
Yeah.
And there's usually a 6-month waiting list for income-based housing. So they're going to have to find a fair marketplace that will... accept them as they are.
You know, Erica, that sounds like a justice issue to me. We hear these payday lenders with, you know, 300% mm-hmm. Interest rates and things of that nature. If somebody is truly taking advantage of the underprivileged because their rent, they may be able to get into a place without a background check mm-hmm. or whatever, but it's three times the normal going rate, that just seems like a justice issue to me.
It is, and it's something the City of Lexington and community partners within Lexington are trying to work with, and
right.
the Fair Housing Council works with, and Adult and Tenant Services, and it's an issue of there's not enough housing for everybody.
Right, sure.
And the housing that is available to our clients is very limited because of the barriers they have, because
right.
of their previous evictions,
right.
because of their low income, or a felony charge. They aren't, it's a very small pot
right.
where they can pull housing from.
Mm.
And so this is an issue that's been discussed at every meeting I've attended
right. Right.
for this past year that I've gotten into this position.
Mm.
Working with the Lexington Rescue Mission.
Erica, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. One of the more exciting programs at the Lexington Rescue Mission is the reentry into society, back into the culture. And through AmeriCorps Vista, Yvette Davis is able to be that key component to making sure that those who come from the world of incarceration now get truly reintegrated into the culture of the Lexington community. Because those with certainly prison records, felony charges, all of these strikes against them need every bit of possible assistance that they can have. That's what Yvette is here to do. And we're going to hear about exactly what she does as we hear from Yvette right now.
We have several goals. So one of the most important is that we're trying to expand our reentry project into all the surrounding counties surrounding Fayette County. So right now we're in Fayette County, Woodford County, and Jessamine County. We're also at Blackburn Prison, and we're at North Point Prison.
And this is a new program? This is something that's recently
introduced? The reentry program's been going on for about 2 years,
okay.
But it was only in Fayette County at that time.
Okay.
So we've been expanding and slowly, and then within the last month, we kind of blew up and we expanded rapidly.
Oh,
so
wow.
We're getting ready to add about 10 more classes by the end of this month.
Okay. What do you think the growth is attributed to? Success in the program?
Success.
Wow.
A lot of the places are requesting us. We're no longer having to go in and sell a program. Mm. They're calling us asking, when can we come to
their jail?
Wow,
that's got to be a good feeling, right? When people are like, hey, that's working. They're calling you.
Oh, it's great. It is really great.
I've never had that experience in my life. I'm always selling everything. So why do you think it's successful? Because there's always that repeat, the potential for reincarceration. I mean, that's something that seems to be hanging over the heads of anybody who's had a record.
Well, a lot of our success is we don't just stop in the jails. We actually have an outside program where once you are released, we hook you up with mentors.
Oh, wow.
So right now we have some one-on-one mentors, we have some two-on-one mentors, and we have some three-on-one mentors, depending upon the needs of that individual.
Wow, so one individual could have up to three mentors.
Can have up to three mentors.
Wow.
And our mentors have to make face-to-face contact at least once a week and electronic contact every day.
Oh, really? Wow.
So it kind of helps people to set goals and follow up when they're held accountable.
So who would find themselves needing three mentors, and what would those mentors do?
It would depend on the person. Actually, we're working on the outside with a program called Genesis Process.
Okay.
And the Genesis Process is a cognitive behavioral change program that is also Christian based.
Right.
So when they're working together, it works really well as a group. So we try to give everybody at least two mentors.
Hmm.
In some cases, depending upon what charges you had, how long you were gone, three people or two people can be kind of overwhelming.
Hmm.
So we do one-on-one with them until they're comfortable.
So interesting. So I would think it would be the exact reverse, but you're saying that the more challenged individual probably just would be more comfortable with a one-to-one as
yes.
opposed to this group.
Yes.
Okay.
Because sometimes a group can be kind of overwhelming
yeah, sure.
when you're used to being kind of solitary.
Yeah.
And so a lot of our success comes from the fact that we do follow them on the outside, that we do keep up, that we write letters while they're on the inside. Mm. It becomes a family.
Yeah.
And a lot of people haven't had that.
So I'm gonna step back. So the mentorship begins when they're incarcerated and continues with the same individuals on the other side?
No. Actually,
okay.
The classes are with one set, and because of some of the rules in some of the facilities, you can't have contact. If you had contact with them while they were in, it's a 6 month to 2 year wait before you can have contact on the outside.
So they're gonna step out immediately with part of the program, but somebody new.
Somebody new, but we try to do at least one introduction close to when they're getting out.
Okay.
So you get to meet the person. And a lot of people are okay with it because they've already met people from the mission.
Yeah.
And I'm usually that go-between.
Wow.
So they meet me while they're inside. And because I'm over the program, I'm allowed to have contact on the outside.
Hmm. So the Lexington Rescue Mission is the only organization with this VISTA program?
VISTA's... Anyone can request it. If they're a not-for-profit organization and they can support a VISTA,
right.
And by support, you have to have the need for it, and you have to have people around who can help the VISTA with whatever questions and concerns that they may have.
Right.
And so far, I will say, after meeting a few other VISTAs who are in Lexington, I'm probably at one of the best organizations.
Well,
far as support,
you hit the jackpot.
I hit the jackpot.
That's great. And the other VISTA workers are doing the same reentry program? Are they doing that?
No, everybody's doing something different.
I got you.
So I'm with reentry. Someone else, we actually have another VISTA on the reentry team. She's actually AmeriCorps, and she's doing housing.
Okay.
So we work together, but we're different projects. But our projects collide a lot.
Yeah. So someone comes out of incarceration. They enter your program. How long do they have mentoring before they're kind of on their own?
We don't give it a time limit.
No, okay.
It's however long you need us, and we're hoping that by the end of it, it's no longer a mentor relationship, it's a friendship.
Right.
Our ultimate goal is to create relationships.
Yeah.
A lot of times people come out, and one of the reasons that they recidivate is because they don't have a change. If you don't change your people, places, and things, and you go back to the same thing, you get the same results.
Right.
So we're creating a different atmosphere, a different set of circumstances, a different set of people.
Yeah. And often that toxicity comes from relationships, right?
Yes. Most of the time it comes from relationships. And right now, so far, this program with the mentors, we've started that in July of last year, and we have not had anyone recidivate.
Wow. That's
so
pretty,
we're doing really good.
That's pretty strong.
Yes.
No wonder you're getting calls.
Yeah. And, you know, the Kentucky average is 44%. We were trying to reduce it by half. And so far, we're on course.
Wow. Knocking it out of the park. That's pretty awesome. So if somebody got into this, you know, eventual beyond the mentoring and they've actually developed a set of new friends who have better values, will those friends ideally then continue to kind of hold them accountable? Even I watch everybody's social media posts, right? I'm constantly watching what people are out there because, I mean, we're all connected in this world. Would somebody potentially intervene and say, hey, I see you going down a path here with these people or whomever? I mean, could they be that kind of accountability individual there?
That's the goal.
That's the goal.
The goal is that you're held accountable. You have good friends. I have good friends.
Right.
And our friends hold us accountable.
Yeah.
If they see you doing something that's not quite right, they're going to pull your shirt tails and say, hey.
Yeah.
That's what we're hoping to do with our mentoring program. Hmm. You now have new friends who will pull your shirt tails and tell you, uh-uh, that's wrong.
Wow. And do you think a lot, or do you think that some, or maybe a percentage of those in this have really never even had that? They've never had friends like that. Do you think that's part of it?
From what I'm seeing, because I'm in the jails pretty much every day. I go and I sit through the classes. I watch because I have to keep up with everybody doing whatever they're doing.
Right.
And that seems to be the underlying theme for most people, that not only were they kind of doing wrong, their friends were doing wrong. A lot of times their parents were doing wrong.
Right.
Their brothers and sisters. So you just have a whole vacuum of people kind of sucking you down.
Mm.
And this is the first positive relationship that they've had.
Wow.
When they meet us inside the jails.
Wow. And probably began with some degree of compromise, and they've just continued to compromise themselves that entire time.
Yes.
Wow.
It starts out with saying yes to one bad idea, and it snowballs from there.
Mm-hmm. Because the bad idea may have immediate results that may seem positive at first.
Right. It seems like, hey, it's fast money, and we got paid, but now you're doing 10 years.
Yeah. Wow.
And we have a lot of people inside who will take our classes multiple times because each time it's same class, but it's something different. You get something different, especially with the new Genesis process, because it's cognitive behavioral. This time you may work on anger. Next time you may work on guilt. Next time you may work on forgiveness. So you always have something new you can work on. And as long as you want to work, we're working with you.
So so timing is a big issue, obviously, on when they come through this program and kind of what they get out of it. So can they keep coming back through, kind of like the mentoring? They can keep that? They can keep coming back through as many times as they need?
As long as they're incarcerated, we have classes. They are welcome to come.
And that's only for the incarcerated?
It's only for the incarcerated. Okay. But now, since we're opening a new property, we're going to also have Jobs for Life classes for outside.
Oh, wow.
So if you're inside, and as people know, you get out, nobody can say when you're going to get out or when you get transferred. So a lot of times they'll get close to finishing and now they're released. So now we have the program on the outside where they can finish that program on the outside and then start the mentoring program, which is the Genesis process, once they finish that.
You know, it sounds like this program could be successful even for those who haven't been incarcerated, just have been in some sort of chronic kind of cycle of homelessness or under employment, or I mean, am I right? I mean, could it be eventually transferred into other areas?
It could be transferred to almost anything.
Has that been considered, or do you know?
It is being considered here, and actually here they have programs kind of like that with the resource counselors, where if you haven't been incarcerated, you're with the resource counselors, and they do almost the same thing. Wow. They haven't set up a mentoring program yet.
Okay.
But they're there to help you and guide you and show you how to get housing and how to get food and how to get clothing, help you with employment. So they have all of that in place. They just haven't did the mentoring program. And even with them, they will refer people to us who aren't incarcerated currently, but 20 years ago they were. Mm-hmm. As long as you have incarceration, even if it's behind you, we can still help.
Oh, wow. Wow.
On the reentry side.
Yeah. Are most of the individuals you work with felonies or misdemeanor?
For the most part, they're felonies.
Yeah.
For the most part.
That would have given them a sentence.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Once they have actually been charged and are in the system, then we are there.
Yeah. And that's a big hurdle for a lot of stuff. Housing, employment, you name it, you got a felony record. Do you ever get that expunged? Is it possible to get that?
Some charges can be expunged after 5 years, but not serious felonies, you know, murders or sex offenses, things like that. You're kind of stuck with.
And you're working with people like that.
We're working with people like that.
Murderers,
those are our
rapists.
Base. We are working with them because, you know, our underlying theme is everybody can be saved.
Right.
You just have to work with them, and you have to work a little longer with some people than others, and we have no problem with that. We don't have a time limit on our help.
Mm. Wow. Well, Yvette, you're doing amazing work, obviously, with this program, and the fact that its success is speaking for itself and people are coming to you guys now to say, how do we get our hands on this? That's pretty impressive. So I really just wish you well with what you're doing, and thank you for giving of yourself the way you've done to do this. It's pretty impressive.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you. It was pretty amazing to see the inside of this operation and see exactly how it works, and certainly to be here at lunchtime with all of the activity going on and seeing exactly what they do on such a cold day in Lexington and how they're able to have their doors open to serve warm meals to the folks in the community. And while I was having lunch, I heard a story of a volunteer who talked about a gentleman who was really in that situation that we heard from Yvette, right? That situation of just unfortunate challenge, repeated challenges, and really with felony charges on his way to probably not being able to make much good of himself without the help of this organization. And the story she told me was that he was able to find employment. He was able to stay out of jail, stay out of trouble. And now 2 years on the job with an amazing opportunity ahead of him that he would never have had without the reentry program that they have with the Lexington Rescue Mission. So it's encouraging to see so many good things going on and an impact that is measurable. Measurable. We heard these numbers, right? That they were hoping for a 20% response rate, you know, cut the state average in half. And they basically have they've cut it down to 2%, if that, maybe even less. Amazing stuff. All of this good stuff, right? That's happening right here in our own backyard. That's what the Good Stuff Weekly is all about, shining the spotlight on the amazing work in this community of Lexington. I'm Leo Brown.